William Teasdale stood at the bar in his parlor at Thistledown and poured two glasses of scotch.
Ah, Morton, it is good to have a fellow countryman to drink with, and to have someone who appreciates good whiskey. These Americans and their awful bourbon, except most of the time it isn't even bourbon. It is some indescribable, abominable concoction they call, and rightly so, rot-gut.
Their drink may be foul, but I have found much about the Americans to admire.
Well, of course you would say that, wouldn't you? After all, you are married to an American.
I am indeed, old boy. But that's not the only reason. I find most Americans to be loyal and trustworthy.
Does that include the members of the Yellow Kerchief Gang?
It does not. They have killed 6 of my men, William. 6. They are fiends of the lowest order.
And how many cattle have you lost?
I told you, I don't know. Compared to the loss of human life, why should I be concerned about the loss of a few cows?
From what I've heard, Morton, it is many more than a few cows you have lost.
I suppose it is.
I am concerned about every cow I may lose, and unlike you, I have no investors back home. That means that I survive or sink on my own without bringing others down with me. You, on the other hand, have many investors, all of whom will be very concerned about how many cows you have lost.
It seems to me like we are being singled out for this gang's activity.
Of course we are going to be targeted. We are the 2 biggest landowners in the county.
I suppose that is right.
Look, Morton, I know that several of your investors are very upset with you because, despite your promise of returning a profit to them, you are losing money, and you have been losing money for over 2 years.
I think they know that I am doing my best by them. Any investment is a risk. At least they aren't holding me personally responsible for the losses.
Don't you think, though, for the sake of your investors, and especially for your sake, that you should consider cutting your losses before they get any higher?
How would I do that?
Simple. You sell your ranch to me, and let me worry about your creditors and investors.
I thank you for your offer, but no, I think I'll hang on to my ranch.
Mark my words. You don't have enough funds to weather this storm.
There may not be a storm if I have my way.
What do you mean, if you have your way?
I have hired someone to come to my assistance.
Who?
Frewen reached into his jacket pocket and pulled a paperback novel and held it out toward Teasdale. Teasdale looked at the cover. The cover picture showed a man astride a horse in full gallop. The man had the reins of the horse secured by his teeth and held pistols in both hands. A streak of fire streamed from the barrel of each pistol. The title was big and bold.
Matt Jensen and the Desert Outlaws.
I have hired this man.
Matt Jensen? Have you gone daft, Morton? Matt Jensen isn't even real. He is the hero of a series of penny dreadful novels. What on earth would make you do such a thing?
Oh, this story in this book isn't real. I know that. But Matt Jensen is real.
What makes you think so?
This newspaper article.
Frewen showed Teasdale the article he had cut from the Cheyenne Leader, telling how Matt Jensen had tracked down and killed 2 of the outlaws who had robbed the bank in Livermore, Colorado, and killed the banker and his family.
I have already been in contact with him, and I expect he will be here within the week.
Wait a minute, Morton. So what you're telling me is that you have hired a gunfighter?
He isn't a gunfighter. Well, yes, he is. But it isn't like you think. He uses his gun for justice, not for evil.
I don't know. I think you are making a big mistake.
Shortly after Frewen left Thistledown, Teasdale saddled his horse and rode up to 9 Mile Creek Pass. To anyone who happened to be riding by, this was just another of the many small streams and creeks that were common throughout Johnson County. It was a distance of 15 miles from Thistledown, and it took Teasdale almost 2 hours of easy riding to reach it. As he approached the pass, He pulled his rifle from its saddle sheath, tied a piece of yellow cloth to the barrel, then held it up as he continued to ride. Looking toward the notch at the left side of the pass, he saw the flash of a mirror, signaling that he had been seen and that he would be allowed to come in. Returning the rifle to its holster, he slapped his legs against the side of his horse, urging it into a trot. Riding up through the notch, he knew that he was being watched. Although he couldn't see anyone, he could feel several eyes on him. Not until he reached the place where a trail turned hard left did he see anyone. This was the entry guard, and he stood there with his right leg on a stone, the butt of his rifle resting on his leg as he watched Teasdale ride up the trail. At the end of the trail was a small cabin. The cabin had actually once been a line shack on Teasdale's ranch, but was moved from the ranch to this place. When Teasdale dismounted in front of the cabin, he was met by Sam Logan. Sam Logan was wiry, just under 6 feet tall, with a pockmarked complexion and a sweeping, very dark handlebar mustache that seemed to hang on to a hooked nose. His dark eyes were set deep in their sockets. His hair was as dark as his mustache.
Well now, Mr. Teasdale, come to pay us a visit, have you? What brings you here?
Have you ever heard of a man by the name of Matt Jensen?
Oh yeah, sure, who hasn't heard of him?
Then you mean he is real?
You're damn right he's real.
You are sure now? You aren't talking about some dime novel cowboy, are you? Because that is the only place I've ever heard of him.
Well, the books they write about him are full of crap, but Matt Jensen is real. Why are you asking?
Morton Fruin says that he has hired Matt Jensen to come to his assistance.
Well, if Fruin really has hired him, that ain't going to be no good for us. A man like Matt Jensen isn't nothing but trouble. My advice to you is to get someone to take care of him, and do it quick.
Get someone to take care of him? What do you mean by get someone? I thought it was your job to take care of the seamier side of our partnership.
Yeah, well, I ain't gonna go up against Matt Jensen, that's for sure. Not unless I get forced into it. I've got too good a thing going here, and I ain't gonna risk it by getting tangled up with Matt Jensen. Leastwise, not unless I have at least half of my men with me. If I was you, I'd hire someone to take care of him, and I'd do it pronto.
Do you have any suggestions as to who I might get to take care of him?
I don't know. Jensen is... Wait, yeah, maybe I do have an idea. I know a man who just might be able to do it. He's faster than greased lightning, and I know for a fact he's been wanting to face Jensen down. I expect if you paid him enough, he'd do it.
Who is this man, and how do I get in contact with him?
His name is Kyle Houston, and he's my cousin. I'll get in touch with him for you.
On board the Western Eagle on the Union Pacific line. 10-year-old Winnie Churchill sat between his mother and the window as the train hurtled across the long, empty spaces.
Mama, have you ever seen a place so large as America?
Of course I have, dear. I was born here, remember?
Does that make me half American?
It does indeed.
Then if I wanted to be an American cowboy when I grow up, I could be.
Oh, heavens, darling. I certainly don't think your father would like for you to be running around out here in the American West as a cowboy.
But Uncle Morton is a cowboy, is he not? And he isn't even American. I could be an even better cowboy because I am half American.
I suppose if you put it that way, you could. Although I'm not sure that Morton considers himself a cowboy. I think he considers himself a rancher. From what I've heard, though, he's not a particularly good one, but please don't tell him I said so.
Well, I am definitely going to be a cowboy when I grow up. I am going to ride a horse and carry a gun and fight wild Indians.
You're still young. I'm sure that by the time you grow up, some occupation other than being a cowboy will strike your fancy.
William Teasdale sat at his desk in the office of his house, examining the figures on the paper before him. So far, he had bought almost 2,000 head of cattle from Sam Logan and the Yellow Kerchief Gang, paying them $5 a head for cattle that would bring him $40 a head at the market. For now, all the rustled cattle were being kept away from his main herd in a part of his ranch that was the most remote from what people normally regarded as Thistledown. They would be kept there until the brands could be changed. Once that was accomplished, the stolen cattle would be integrated into his herd. Teasdale smiled at how easy it was to convert the capital letter F for Fruin to his own brand, which was the letter T with two crossbars. That double bar T that stood for Teasdale Thistledown was not only branded on the cattle, but was painted on the side of his coach, as well as on the sign at the entrance to his ranch. Thistledown Ranch, William Teasdale, Esquire. Of course, there was a double advantage to the rustled cattle. It not only increased his herd and profit, but it also decreased Fruin's herd and increased his debt. Teasdale was certain that Fruin had not the slightest suspicion that Teasdale himself was behind all his troubles. The only fly in the ointment now was Matt Jensen. But Logan had told Teasdale this morning that Kyle Houston was already in Sussex, just waiting for Jensen to show up. Sussex was a town with a single road that ran perpendicular to the Powder River. The road, which was appropriately enough called Sussex Road, was flanked on both sides by hitching rails and as many saloons as there were legitimate businesses. There were several horses tied to the hitching rails, most of them within a few feet of one of the eight saloons. The horses nodded and shuddered, swished their tails and stamped their hooves in a vain attempt to get rid of the annoying flies. Matt Jensen surveyed the town as he rode in. Matt had never settled down in one place, so in his lifetime there had been hundreds of towns like this. The streets faced by houses of rip-sawed lumber, false-fronted businesses, a few sod buildings, and even a tent or two. It had rained earlier in the day and the street was a quagmire. The hooves of the horses had worked the mud and horse droppings into one long, stinking, sucking pool of ooze. When the rain stopped, the sun, high and hot, began the process of evaporation. The result was a foul miasma arising from the street. It wasn't a matter of finding a saloon, but a matter of choosing which saloon he wanted to patronize. The one he chose was the Lion and the Crown, the biggest and grandest building in town. It was only marginally cooler inside, and the dozen and a half customers who were drinking held bandanas at the ready to wipe away the sweat. Matt surveyed the place, doing so with such calmness that the average person would think it no more than a glance of idle curiosity. In reality, it was a very thorough appraisal of the room. He was interested to see who was carrying and who wasn't, and how they were armed, what type of weapons they were carrying, and whether or not those who were armed were wearing their guns in such a way as to indicate that they knew how to use them. There was one man standing at the far end of the bar who did bear a second look. He was a small man, no taller than 5 feet 5 inches, Matt guessed. He was dressed all in black, including a low crown hat that was ringed by a silver band. What caused Matt to pay a little more attention to him than anyone else in the room was the fact that, while everyone else in the saloon had given him at least a cursory glance, this man stood at the bar staring pointedly into his drink. It was as if he was purposely avoiding any eye contact. The bartender stood behind the bar, wiping the used glasses with his stained apron before he stacked them among the unused glasses. When he saw Matt step up to the bar, he put a glass into place, then moved down toward him.
What'll it be?
I'll have a beer.
The bartender reached for one of the glasses he had just cleaned with the stained apron, but Matt pointed to a different glass. It also might have been wiped with a dirty apron, but at least Matt hadn't seen him do it.
I'll take that glass.
The bartender shrugged his shoulders but made no comment as he held the new glass under the spigot. Matt finished his beer, then put the glass down.
Want another?
Not yet. I got 4 days of trail stink on me and I need to take a bath somewhere. Didn't see a bathhouse on the way in.
That's because this town ain't got a bathhouse. But if you're wanting a bath, you can take one here. We got a bathing room upstairs. It'll cost you $2.
$2? For a bath? Most of the time, it's no more than a quarter.
Yeah, but since this is the only place in town you can get a bath, that is, unless you're planning on bathing in the Powder River, the boss charges what he can get.
How many people are willing to pay that?
No more than one or two a week.
Matt knew he was being taken advantage of, but he really needed a bath and had been thinking about it for the last 24 hours. He put $2 on the bar.
Water better be hot, there better be soap in the towel, it damn well better be clean.
Don't worry, it will be. Can't very well take a bath without hot water, soap, and a clean towel now, can you?
I didn't see a hotel either.
Not likely you would, seeing as we ain't got one. We got rooms here, if you want one.
How much?
That'll be $2.
You know where I can find a man named Morton Fruin?
You looking for him, are you?
I am.
If you think you might get hired on out at the Powder River Cattle Company Ranch, I don't think he's hiring anyone new.
I'm not looking to be hired, I'm just looking for him.
Well, if you come in town from the north, you're more than likely seen his castle.
His castle?
Yeah, that's what folks around here call it. It's made of logs, but it ain't nothing like any log cabin you ever seen. Why, I wouldn't be surprised if it was the biggest house in all of Wyoming.
How long will it take to get the bath ready?
Not long. 15 minutes or so. You gonna be taking a room here? Because if you are, I'll have the bathtub brought up to your room filled with hot water.
Matt took out another $2.
Yeah, I'll take a room. But for now, I saw a mercantile across the street. I'm going to go buy a new pair of trousers and a shirt. That is, if the same man that owns this place doesn't own that store. If he does, I probably can't afford it.
Mr. Oliver don't own it yet. But he's been trying to buy it, and like as not, he will someday.
Would your name be Matt Jensen?
The question came from the man at the far end of the bar, the small man dressed in black. Hanging low in a quick-draw holster on the right side of a bullet-studded pistol belt was a silver-plated Colt 44, its grip inlaid with mother-of-pearl. The man's eyes were so pale a blue that they looked like chips of ice. He had not turned toward Matt yet, but was watching him in the mirror. He tossed the rest of his drink down, then took a towel from one of the bar rings and very carefully dabbed at his mouth. That done, he replaced the towel, then turned to look at Matt.
Hey, you!
Matt did not turn.
I'm talking to you, mister.
Are you now?
You're Matt Jensen, are you?
Matt didn't answer.
I seen you once down in Laramie, Matt Jensen. That is you, ain't it?
I'm Matt Jensen.
You're the famous gunfighter, aren't you?
Mister, seems to me like you've got something sticking in your craw. Why don't you let me buy you a drink, and then we'll each just go our own way.
It don't happen like that.
I think I see where you're going with this. And if you'd take a little friendly advice, I'd say don't go there.
Don't go there? Don't go there? Is that what you said?
That's what I said. Don't go there.
Is that how you've built your reputation, Mr. Matt Jensen? By frightening people into not drawing against you? Am I supposed to be afraid now just because I'm in the presence of the great Matt Jensen?
You're not going to let this go, are you?
No, I ain't going to let it go. You see, I make my living with my gun, and I've been hired to kill you. Well, sir, I don't want to be hung for murder, so the only way I can justify killing you is if it is a fair fight. So, that's what I'm wanting to do now. I want to goad you into drawing on me.
What's your name?
Name is Houston. Kyle Houston. I reckon you've heard of me.
Yeah, I have.
Really? What have you heard?
I've heard that you're a bully and a coward, trying to make a reputation by backshooting old men and young boys. Heard you never faced a man down in your life.
Draw, Jensen!
Houston was quick, quicker than anyone else this town had ever seen. And as he started his draw, a broad, triumphant smile spread across his face. He had caught Matt by surprise, and Matt was going to have to react to the draw. Then, even before Houston could bring his pistol to bear, he realized that he wasn't quick enough.
I'll be damned. I've been killed.
Yeah, you have.
Matt turned back to the bar, then slid his beer toward the bartender.
I believe I'm going to need something a little stronger than beer.
The bartender drew a whiskey and handed it to him.
Thanks.
No problem, Mr. Jensen. If you want anything, just ask.
What's your name, barkeep?
It's Moore, Mr. Jensen. Harry Moore.
Did you know that gentleman, Mr. Moore?
Only by his reputation.
What kind of reputation was that?
He was fast with a gun. Folks say he was the fastest.
That's what the folks said, is it?
Yes, sir.
What do you say?
I say folks was wrong.
The gun smoke had cleared out, but the smell of burnt gunpowder still hung in the air as Marshal Drew, the town marshal, arrived.
What happened here?
Houston tried to brace this fella.
Houston started the fight?
That's right. Houston drew first.
You're telling me that Houston drew first, but this man still beat him?
That's right, Marshal.
Mister, if you beat Houston fair and square the way these folks are telling it, you must be some kind of gunfighter. What's your name?
Jensen. Matt Jensen.
Matt Jensen! Some bitch! Did Houston know who he was tangling with?
He called me by name.
Marshal Drew looked back toward Houston's corpse.
Well, I reckon you run across punks like Houston here more times than you can count, don't you? You're trying to make a name for yourself.
Time to time. Most men have more sense than he did, and less guts. I don't think he was trying to make a name for himself. He had another motive.
What do you mean?
He told me he was hired to kill me.
Hired to kill you? By who?
I'd like to know the answer to that as well.
Now, are you here to meet with Mr. Fruin?
Yes, how'd you know that?
Well, I'm the one who suggested he get in touch with you.
Do we know each other?
Now, we never met, but I sure heard of you. My name is Drew, and if I can be of any assistance while you're, doing whatever it is you're going to do for Mr. Fruin, please just let me know.
All right, Marshal Drew, thank you. I appreciate that.
Harry, I'll get the Welsh down here to pick up the body and get it cleared away for you.
No hurry, Marshal. Having Houston shot by a man like Matt Jensen's going to bring into business. Hell, I may get Dyser to come set up his camera. I'll charge people to have their pictures took with Houston's body.
Matt left the saloon to go buy a new shirt and trousers at the mercantile store. He returned about half an hour later. The bartender waved him over.
It's room 4, Mr. Jensen. Second room to your left.
Matt climbed the stairs, then opened the door to the room. There was a zinc bathtub in the room filled with water. The little wisps of steam that were rising from the water indicated that the water was warm. Matt slipped down into the tub, where he soaked for nearly an hour. Then, with his skin red from the hot water and soapy scrub, he dried off and walked over to lie down on the bed. Still naked from his bath, he crawled between the stiff, clean sheets and was asleep within moments. The room was dark when he woke up. For a moment, he didn't know where he was. Then he remembered that he had taken a room over the saloon. At the same moment, he realized that he was awake because something had awakened him, though he didn't know where it was. The doorknob rattled quietly, and all confusion and hesitancy were gone. Matt was out of bed, on his feet instantly. Pulling his pistol from the holster that hung on the head of the bed, he moved as quietly as a stalking cat to the wall next to the door. Matt waited. Whoever was coming into his room wasn't breaking into it. They had a key. The doorknob turned again, and the door began to swing open, spilling an ever-widening arc of light into the room. Matt watched the door ease open away from him. As it did, the arc of light turned into a bar of light that splashed all the way across to the foot of the bed. A shadow filled the door, gliding in through the opening, backlit by the lantern on the wall in the hall beyond.
What the hell?
The person trying to get into his room was a woman. Matt grabbed the woman's arm and pulled her inside. He closed the door quickly behind her, the motion pulling her against him.
Who are you?
My name is Lily Langtree.
Lily Langtree? I've heard of you. The next question is, what are you doing in my room?
I might ask you the same thing. This is my room. I've been staying here for 2 weeks.
What?
I'm a friend of Morton Fruin. However, I am not a friend of his wife, Clara. So when I come to visit, I have to make other arrangements. This room is my other arrangement, and has been for the last 2 weeks.
I don't know what to say.
I rented a room, and this is the room the bartender gave me.
Oh, wait a minute. I think I know what must have happened. I was in room 3, but then I asked to be changed to this room. There is some construction going on down the street, and when they get started in the morning, the hammering and sawing awakens me. I complained about it to Johnny this morning, and he gave me a key to this room. He must not have told Harry. I'll go back across to room 3. I really didn't expect to see you in here, and I especially didn't expect to see so much of you.
Matt felt his cheeks burning, and he was glad that it was too dark for her to see that. He stepped back into the shadow to restore some modesty, if not dignity.
You don't have to keep looking, you know.
I see your point. I'll just step back across the hall now. I do apologize for disturbing you. Good night now.
The next morning, Matt was enjoying a breakfast of coffee, bacon, eggs, fried potatoes, biscuits, and gravy at the cafe when Lily Langtree came in. Seeing Matt at one of the tables, she smiled and crossed the room to him. Matt stood up.
Good morning, Mr. Jensen.
You know my name, Miss Langtree?
Of course I do. Would you mind if I joined you?
No, not at all. I'd be pleased with the company.
My, that's quite a breakfast. How long has it been since you've eaten?
It's been quite a while. Not since supper last night.
Lily ordered a cup of hot tea and toast with butter and marmalade.
You expect something like that to hold you till dinner?
No, I'll probably eat a light lunch.
I forgot that sophisticated people call supper dinner.
Is that what you think I am, Mr. Jensen? Sophisticated?
Well, yes, ma'am, being as you're English and famous and all.
Evidently, I'm not the only famous one in this conversation. You seem surprised that I knew your name. But after your, shall we call it, deadly encounter, you are the person everyone is talking about this morning.
I'm sorry about that.
You shouldn't be sorry you killed him. From what everyone is saying, you had no choice. It was either him or you.
I'm not sorry I killed him. I'm just sorry that it has to become the talk of the town.
I'm also told, however, that the name Matt Jensen is not just known here in Sussex, but quite well known not only in the West, but throughout the country. You are that Matt Jensen, are you not?
Yes, ma'am.
Oh, for heaven's sakes, Mr. Jensen, quit calling me ma'am. You'll make me feel like an old spinster.
Sorry, that is Miss Langtree. I'm just trying to be polite is all.
I think calling me Lily would be very polite.
All right. Lily it is, then.
Matt, if I may ask, what are you doing in Sussex? This seems like a small and very out-of-the-way town, even for the Far West.
I'm here because I received a letter from Morton Frewen asking me to come.
My, I'm impressed that Morton could crook his finger and bring someone like you to do his bidding.
He did a bit more than crook his finger.
What did he do?
He included a bank draft for $5,000.
Oh, dear. Morton spends so freely. The bad thing is, the money he spends isn't his own.
Not his own money.
Well, I suppose it is, in a way. At least he has control of it. You see, Morton is very good about getting others to invest in his ideas. He has long had the idea of coming to America and building a huge cattle ranch. An empire, really. The Powder River Cattle Company is the fruition of that idea. And though ostensibly he is the owner, there are so many people invested in the ranch that I fear he is little more than a figurehead. And since his ranch is losing money so badly, I'm not sure how much longer he will be able to hang on.
I understand that the cattle rustling is very bad here. If you lose too many cows to rustlers, it's hard to turn a profit.
I suppose that is true, but Sir William doesn't seem to be losing money as badly as poor Morton. In fact, Sir William has offered to buy Morton's ranch.
Sir William?
That would be William Teasdale. Like Morton, Sir William is a subject of the crown. And like Morton, he has the dream of establishing a cattle empire in the American West. Unlike Morton, however, Sir William seems to be succeeding.
Out at Thistledown Ranch, William Teasdale, the subject of Lily Langtree's discussion, was in the ranch office talking to Reed, his foreman.
I thought Kyle Houston was supposed to be the best money could buy.
He's damn good. Best I ever saw.
You mean he was damn good, don't you? Now he is damn dead.
Yes, sir, I reckon he is. So what are we going to do about this Jensen fella now?
Teasdale knew that he wouldn't be able to carry off his cattle rustling, though he preferred to call it his ranch enhancement scheme, unless he had the support of his foreman. He had left it up to Reed to hire the cowboys, men he could trust, men who knew the arrangement Teasdale had with Sam Logan and the Yellow Kerchief Gang.
For the time being, we will just play defensive chess.
Say what?
We will monitor closely the moves made by Fruin and Mr. Jensen.
News of the gunfight between Matt Jensen and Kyle Houston had reached Fruin Castle almost as quickly as it reached Thistledown.
I am wondering, Mr. Morrison, if I have opened Pandora's box.
What do you mean?
This man, Matt Jensen. I haven't said anything to anyone about him, but here he is because I sent for him. And what is the first thing he does when he arrives? He gets into a gunfight.
Yes, sir, but from what everyone is saying, Houston is the one who provoked a fight. And from what I understand, he claimed that he'd been hired to kill Jensen.
Heavens! Do you suppose Jensen has made so many enemies that there are actually people who will pay to have him killed?
That, or...
Or what?
Or it's somebody local. It could be that someone found out that you hired him and decided to take care of him.
You mean somebody like Sam Logan?
And that would be my guess. He is the head of the Yellow Kerchief Gang. I could see how he might not want someone like Matt Jensen poking around out here.
But Logan is a desperado himself. Why would he hire someone else to oppose Mr. Jensen?
But he runs with the gang, and ultimately, people who run with gangs are cowards.
That might be so. Heavens, it is nearly tea time. I had best join Mrs. Fruin. You will excuse me.
Oh, yes, sir. I got some things to take care of anyway.
Morrison hastened his withdrawal. So far, he had never been invited to tea time, and he hoped that he never would.
I'm sorry I'm late, dear.
Fruin stepped into the crimson drawing room where Clara Fruin was already waiting. He drew his own tea from a silver tea server, then selected a biscuit, though the cowboys would have called it a cookie, and took a seat on the opposite side of the table from Clara.
What is that woman doing here?
What woman would that be, dear?
You know very well what woman. I'm talking about Lily Langtree. She's in town, though I'm sure that's not a revelation to you.
Miss Langtree is a singer, actress, and lecturer of no small renown. She is performing at theaters all over America.
There's no theater in Sussex.
My dear, you know that Miss Langtree and I are old friends of long standing. It does not seem that unusual to me that she would call upon us if she found herself in the area.
In the area? And just what area would that be, Morton? The closest railroad is in Medicine Bow, and that is 200 miles away. The stagecoach from Medicine Bow only arrives 3 times per week, and it is a very long and difficult journey.
Clara was a beautiful woman, dainty, blonde, with her hair worn in the close ringlet fashion of the day. Despite her American heritage, Clara had grown up in Paris and was often a guest of Napoleon III. Clara and her even more beautiful sister Jenny had been the toast of Paris society. That she would be jealous of Lily Langtree, a much older and not nearly as attractive a woman, seemed ludicrous to all who knew the couple. And indeed, those who knew Clara well knew also that she wasn't really jealous, but used this merely as a means of keeping Morton Fruin wary of any dalliances.
I only call on her in town because you seem to find her company so objectionable, and I have no wish to upset you.
Invite her out for dinner.
What? But I thought you didn't like her.
I don't like her, but that doesn't mean I can't be civil around her, and I would much rather have her come here for a visit than have you go into town alone to visit her. Somehow that seems so very sordid.
Very well, I shall invite her.
Spirit kicked up silver sheets of spray as he splashed through the stream. Matt would have paused to give his horse an opportunity to drink if he wanted to, but Spirit gave no indication that he was thirsty. Once across the stream, Matt turned back around to pay attention to where he was going. For some time now, he had been aware that two men were dogging him, riding parallel with him, and for the most part, staying out of sight. He was pretty sure they were some of Morton Fruin's men because he had been on Powder River Cattle Company land for some time now. He had picked them up the moment they started shadowing him. Matt rode on for a couple more miles, all the while keeping his eye on them until finally he decided to do something about it. He waited until the trail led in between two parallel rows of hills. Once into the defile, he cut off the trail and, using the ridgeline to conceal his movement, rode ahead about 200 yards. He went over to the gully his two tails were using, dismounted, then pulled his rifle from the saddle scabbard and climbed onto a rocky ledge to wait for them. Matt watched and waited. He saw them come around a bend in the gully and knew that not only had they not seen him, they hadn't even missed him. He waited until they were right on him. Then he suddenly stood up.
Hold it!
What the hell?
The other rider started for his gun.
Don't do it!
Johnny, keep your hand away from your gun there. Nobody said nothing about shooting anybody.
How did you get here on Powder River Cattle Company land?
You ought to know. You've been dogging my tail for the last 2 miles.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Don't insult my intelligence, Johnny. That makes me mad.
What do we do now, Ian?
All right, mister. We've been dogging you.
Why?
Because you're on Powder River Cattle Company land, that's why.
It's good to know, seeing as I intend to be there.
What are you doing here?
I'm just here to pay the ranch a friendly visit is all.
Uh-uh. We ain't friendly and we don't like visitors.
Shouldn't you let Mr. Fruin decide that?
Our job is to keep people away from him, keep them from bothering him, so we don't have to decide whether or not to see saddle bums like you.
Saddle bum? Well, now you're hurting my feelings. Here I thought I'd gone and gotten all dressed up to meet Mr. Fruin.
What do you want to meet with him for? He ain't hiring nobody.
He's already hired me.
Hired you to do what?
Well, now, I'm afraid I can't answer that question. He sent me a letter, but he didn't say what he wanted me to do.
Mr. Fruin sent you a letter.
He did.
You got that letter with you?
I do.
Let me see it.
Now, Ian, that sounds like a demand. And if you stop and think about it, seeing as how I'm pointing a gun at you, you really aren't in a position to make any demands, are you?
Well, no, sir. Now that you mention it, I don't reckon I am.
All right. Since you've taken that attitude, I'll let you see it.
Matt took the letter from his shirt pocket and handed it to Ian.
But I'm going to take it as a real unfriendly act if something happens to that letter while it's in your hands.
He didn't say nothing to us about hiring someone.
Does he tell you all his business?
No, but since we're supposed to keep strangers off the property, you would think we would have heard something, don't you?
Sounds reasonable to me.
Oh, holy crap. Are you Matt Jensen?
I am.
Let me see you.
Ian handed the letter to Johnny, and Johnny took a moment to read it.
Looks like the boss is writing.
It's real. Could I have my letter back, please?
Johnny returned the letter.
What do you think we ought to do, Ian?
What do you mean, what should we do? Are you crazy? Didn't you read the letter? This is Matt Jensen, for Christ's sake.
I'll tell you what to do. Take me to him. I don't want to get jumped by anyone else. They may not be as intelligent as you two are, and I might wind up having to kill him.
All right. Yeah, that's a good idea. We'll take you.
Back at the house, Fruin got up from his chair, crossed the room, and planted a kiss on the lips of his beautiful wife.
My dear, don't you know that my life started when I met you? Compared to that lucky day when you agreed to become my wife, nothing from my past, no dalliance, no adventure, no accomplishment of any kind could ever be of any import.
You do have a way of smoothing my feathers, don't you, Morton?
Lord, I certainly hope so.
Morton Fruin's gentleman's gentleman stepped into the drawing room.
Sir Morton, there is a gentleman by the name of Matt Jensen to see you.
He's here? Good, good. Show him in, would you please, Benjamin?
Who is Matt Jensen?
He is someone that I hope I can convince to do some work for me.
When Matt was led into the drawing room, he saw as handsome a couple as he had ever seen. The woman was blonde and beautiful, the man tall and handsome, with a well-groomed mustache. Both were elegantly dressed.
Mr. Jensen, thank you so much for coming.
I must confess, Mr. Fruin, that your invitation was quite compelling. In fact, I would say that it provided me with 5,000 reasons to come.
I had hoped that would get your attention. I've read a great deal about you, Mr. Jensen. I knew that if I had any hope of getting your attention, I would have to do something dramatic.
You got my attention.
Good. Clara, would you excuse us, please, my dear? Mr. Jensen and I are going to talk some business, and I fear that some of it might not be suitable for a lady's ears.
Very well. If you would excuse me, Mr. Jensen?
Yes, ma'am.
I hear that there was some unpleasantness last night in the pub.
Yes, I'm afraid there was. The man I shot, Kyle Houston, said that he had been hired to kill me.
So I heard.
Do you have any idea who might have hired him?
My foreman and I were discussing that same subject, and we have come up with the idea that it may have been Sam Logan.
Sam Logan?
Have you ever heard of him?
Only that you mentioned him in your letter.
Yes, well, he is an outlaw, though I have heard that at one time he was a peace officer. I do find that hard to believe, though. I mean, why would a former peace officer become an outlaw?
It's really not all that hard to believe. The West is full of outlaws who've gone straight and started wearing a badge, as well as peace officers who've crossed the line to become outlaws.
Then perhaps the rumors are true. Whatever his background, he is affiliated with a very active gang of cattle rustlers who are operating here in Johnson County with absolute impunity. They call themselves the Yellow Kerchief Gang because they all wear a yellow kerchief, as if it is a point of great personal pride. And I am sorry to say they have already killed 6 of my men, to say nothing of the cattle they have stolen.
Thank you for the way you put that.
I beg your pardon?
When you said that they were causing you trouble, you put the lives of your men above the loss of your cattle. Not all ranchers would do that.
I assure you, Mr. Jensen, I feel the loss of each life most intensely.
Did you tell anyone you were contacting me?
I did, actually. I hoped that just the knowledge that you might be working with me would cause Mr. Logan to have second thoughts about stealing cattle from me.
How does Logan work?
Well, as I said, he is the head of the Yellow Kerchief Gang, and they've gotten very bold because now they are quite large. They succeed by overwhelming numbers, and Logan seems to understand military tactics. He knows where he will be able to enjoy numerical superiority, and he will ride in, bold as you please, with a group of 10 or 12 men against 2 or 3, 4 at the most, and proceed to cut out cattle. On one such raid, he took over 1,500 cattle.
So what exactly do you want from me, Mr. Fruin?
I want you to protect me and mine.
For how long?
At least until we are able to take our cattle to market.
All right.
Oh, and there is one more thing.
What would that be?
My sister-in-law and her young son Winnie are coming to America for an extended visit. They will arrive by train in Medicine Bow on Friday. From there, they will have to travel by stagecoach until they reach Sussex. If you would, I would like for you to be there to meet them, then ride in the coach with them back here to the ranch. I know that may sound a bit odd to you, but I'm more than just a little concerned about their safety.
All right, I'll do that. But tell me, do you have any specific reason to be worried? Is there something I should know?
I have no specific reason to be worried. It is just a feeling I have. I'm sure it is foolish.
Not foolish at all. I stay alive by paying attention to such feelings.
2 days later, Teasdale left Thistledown and rode out to Nine Mile Creek, again going through the ritual of displaying a yellow flag tied to the barrel of his rifle. There were 6 horses tied up out front, and when Teasdale dismounted and tied his own horse off, Sam Logan stepped out onto the front porch. Logan was holding a cup of coffee, and he had a yellow kerchief at his neck.
Hello, Bill.
You don't have to call me Sir William, as I know that there is no regard for titles in this country, but I would prefer it if you would call me Mr. Teasdale.
All right, if that's what you want. I just thought that, you know, what with us being friends and all, that we'd be calling each other by our Christian names.
We are not friends, and there is certainly nothing Christian about our relationship. We have a mutually beneficial working partnership, and that is all.
Well, Mr. Teasdale, if you ain't too good to drink coffee with us, come on in and have a cup.
I'll do that.
There were 5 others inside the shack who, like Logan, were all wearing yellow kerchiefs.
I am sure you have heard by now what happened to Kyle Houston.
I've heard.
I thought you said he would be able to take care of this man, Jensen.
I thought he would. You don't think I would send my own cousin out to be killed, do you?
Well, he was killed, and this puts us back to where we started.
Not quite where we started. I've got another 150 cows for you. That will be another $750.
Where did you get them?
Does it matter?
Yes, it matters. You know damn well it matters. I told you, I will support you and your people only so long as you continue to conduct all of your operations against the Powder River Cattle Company Limited.
Well, if it makes you feel better, I'll tell you that we did take these cows from the Englishmen, and I've already got my men changing the brands.
Good. But that doesn't solve the problem of Matt Jensen, does it?
You don't have to worry about Matt Jensen. I'll find a way to take care of him.
You are going to take care of him?
Yeah.
I thought you said you didn't want to deal with him.
I don't want to deal with him alone, and I won't. That doesn't mean he can't be dealt with.
That's what I like to hear. And you'll have a few days to decide how to do it, since he's going to be gone from now until Friday.
Gone? Gone where?
He's taking a stagecoach down to Medicine Bow to meet Fruin's sister-in-law and nephew. He is going to ride back in the stagecoach with them.
Is he now? Well, that's mighty interesting.
What do you mean?
I mean being in a box like that, riding in the coach and all. Jensen is going to be sort of hogtied. That will make it easier to get to him.
Matt stood on the brick platform of the train depot as the engine came thundering in. The conductor stepped down first, followed by a porter who put a boarding step in position for the detraining passengers to use. Matt leaned against one of the posts that supported the platform awning and crossed his arms across his chest, observing each of the passengers as they disembarked. A man and woman got off the train. Three women stepped down, followed by a family of four. Then a couple of men left the train, and Matt knew, without having to ask, that they were drummers. Because there was a long pause after the drummers disembarked, Matt was beginning to think that perhaps Mrs. Churchill and her son had missed the train. He was about to go back into the depot when a young boy stepped down. He stood on the depot platform with his hands on his hips, looking around in what was obviously great curiosity. There was something about the boy that caught Matt's attention. He did not look like most of the young boys Matt had seen. He was much better dressed, wearing dark blue trousers held up with buttons rather than straps or suspenders, a white shirt with blue cuffs, and a dark blue neckerchief. A moment after the boy stepped down, he was followed by an exceptionally pretty woman with dark, upswept hair and amber eyes. She reached down to touch the boy on the shoulder and then glanced around the depot platform as if looking for someone. Fruin had described her to Matt.
She will no doubt be the most handsome woman you will see on the train, so I don't think you can miss her.
If this was Lady Churchill, Fruin's description of her had been very accurate. If she wasn't the prettiest woman he had ever seen, she was certainly the most handsome he had seen detrain. He walked up to her.
Excuse me, ma'am, but would you be Lady Churchill?
I am. And you are?
My name is Matt Jensen, ma'am. I've been sent by Mr. Fruin to ride in the coach with you and the boy from here to Sussex.
Do you have some proof of that?
Your sister said that you would ask for some proof that I am who I say I am. She wrote a letter and asked me to give it to you.
Matt pulled the letter from his shirt pocket.
Dear Jenny, how wonderful it is to have you and young Winnie pay us a visit. The tall, handsome gentleman who should be standing before you right now is Matt Jensen. He has a widespread reputation of being someone who is proficient with a gun and has been tested many times. You may wonder why I tout his proficiency with a firearm. That is because there are evil men about right now, and I persuaded Morton to call upon Mr. Jensen to escort you from Medicine Bow. You will be safe with him. But knowing you as I do, I can't help but wonder if he will be safe with you. Please forgive the joke. Your loving sister, Clara.
Jenny smiled as she finished reading, then folded the letter and returned it to the envelope.
Apparently, my sister and my brother-in-law have put me in your hands. And they appear to be such strong hands, too. I shall try not to be any trouble.
Lady Churchill, I'm sure you will be no trouble at all.
Lady Churchill is so cumbersome and so bloody British. I'm back in America now. And since we're going to spend some time together, I would really appreciate it if you would call me Jenny.
Oh, I don't know. I think that would be awfully forward of me if I called you by your first name.
And rude if you refused my specific request that you do so, Matt.
Well, now, I wouldn't want it to get back to Mr. Fruin that I was rude to his sister-in-law. If you really want to be called Jenny, I will oblige you.
I do. Will we be taking the coach tonight?
No, ma'am. The first coach for Sussex doesn't leave until 8 o'clock tomorrow morning. I've got rooms for us here at the hotel.
I'm afraid I have rather a large traveling trunk.
Don't worry about it. I'll have it sent to the hotel.
For the entire conversation between Matt and his mother, Winnie had kept his eyes glued on the pistol at Matt's side.
Are you a real cowboy?
I suppose that in a manner of speaking, you could say that I was a cowboy and that I have punched a few cows in my day, but I don't do that very much anymore, so you couldn't rightly call me one. I tend to move around quite a bit.
Punched cows? You have punched cows?
I reckon that is a strange way of saying it, but when cowboys ride herd on cows, they use the term punching cows.
Uncle Morton has cows, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Then while I am here, I shall want to punch a cow.
I'm sure you will get the opportunity.
Would there be a restaurant in the hotel, Matt? We haven't eaten since lunch, and I'm sure Winnie is hungry. I know that I am.
The hotel is a very good dining room.
Would you take dinner with us?
I would be honored to.
Will I get to see any wild Indians while I am here?
I'm sure that while you're here, you will see some Indians.
Are they wild?
There's no such thing as a wild Indian. The Indians were living here with their own culture for thousands of years before the white man ever came.
Oh, I meant no disrespect, sir.
Young man, I don't think it would be in your nature to show disrespect to anyone.
When they reached the hotel, Matt made arrangements for the trunk, then led Jenny and Winnie into the dining room.
You sure will be on the stagecoach coming from Medicine Bow?
I'm quite sure. Mrs. Fruin told my wife that she was expecting her sister and nephew, so she convinced Fruin to send Jensen to Medicine Bow to meet them and take the coach back to Sussex with them.
Good. We can not only get rid of him, we can make it look just like the coach was held up, which it will be.
Remember, no harm is to come to Lady Churchill or her son.
Why not? If they get killed too, it would just make it seem even more like it wasn't nothing but a stagecoach holdup.
No! Nothing is to happen to the woman or her child. I must insist on that.
All right, nothing will happen to them. They'll just have a little excitement they can talk about when they get back to England.
And while I don't want to tell you how to run your business, I would suggest that you don't wear your yellow scarves for this.
Oh, don't worry none about that. We won't be the ones doing it. I got some friends that sort of specialize in holding up stagecoaches.
Back in Medicine Bow, Matt, Jenny, and Winnie were taking their dinner at the dining room of the Railroad Hotel. They had just ordered dinner.
I'm quite sure that I've never eaten buffalo. What does it taste like?
It has a somewhat lighter and sweeter taste than beef, and it's not as fat.
Have you ever shot your gun?
I've shot it, yes.
Have you ever shot anyone with it?
Winnie, what an awful question to ask.
Oh, it's all right. I know that boys his age are interested in such things.
Well, have you?
Yes.
I have read of cowboys and how they can draw their guns very quickly and shoot very accurately. Are you very fast? And can you shoot very accurately?
There is something much more important than being fast and accurate.
What could possibly be more important than that?
The most important thing in any fight is who is right and who's wrong. You must always be on the right side, and by that I don't just mean what is legal, I mean what is morally and ethically right.
I will remember that, Mr. Jensen.